that was asked twice. He was so enthusiastic to ask the question. So I'll, for those of you that weren't with us on Thursday, a little review. Thursday evening was the Wednesday evening class on Thursday, because I was here on Thursday, not Wednesday. And the Wednesday class, which was this week on Thursday, was discussing Bhagavad Gita verses, chapter 18, the verses describing happiness in the modes of nature. And if somebody that has access to a Bhagavad Gita can get the, not the electronic one, but a book, I'll just read what it says about the mode of goodness, happiness and the mode of goodness, and then passion, ignorance, and of course, Krishna is advocating, although Arjuna is a Kshatriya, which means passion, Rajas, Maharaja, great king, still he is to live his life according to the standards of goodness, although that is to say he does his duty that's valiant and heroic and chivalrous and powerful and fighting according to the codes of Dharma. Religious kings would do like that. So here's which was the verse number? 70? No. Huh? 36. 36. Okay, thank you. Chapter 18, text 36, O best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the living, by which the conditioned soul enjoys and by which he sometimes comes to an end of all distress. Sometimes is the transcendental position, not numerically sometimes people in the mode of goodness. But you must come to the transcendental position. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which wakens one to self-realization. Is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. So it, in text 36, Prabhupada doesn't directly translate in the translation itself, abhyasa. So for happiness in the mode of goodness, some practice is required, in contrast to happiness in the mode of passion. It doesn't require practice. There's an object, here's your sense, go for it. No restraint, like an animal, whatever species one may be in, human, animal, bird, fish. Object, sense, go for it. But mode of goodness requires abhyasa, practice, and the result of that practice is ramate. It's a happiness that's not accessible through indulging the senses and sense objects. Even regulated indulgence of the senses and sense objects. It's another happiness. It's a happiness that comes from within. And it has the potential of taking one beyond distress. not just minimizing distress, taking one beyond distress. From the mode of goodness, one can enter into the realm of transcendence. So, happiness and passion and ignorance are also described by Krishna, which we discussed. And so, one of the members attending that Thursday evening program wanted to know, for those that are in the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance, is it possible for them to experience love of God? And I said, yes. So he asked it again. I said, same question, same answer. But he was so like keen on the question, it made me think some more about the question. And so I wanted, that's what this evening's discussion is. Love of God, and how love of God relates to those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance. The short conclusion is yes and no. Meaning, yes, this within every living being, we'll see the scriptural reference, within every living being, with everything that's alive, there's a soul. And the soul, by nature, has this capacity for Krishna prema. It's already there. And it just needs to be awakened. So is there potential for persons in the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion to experience, feel love of God? Yes, filtered through the modes. That was my answer. So now, standard in Bhagavad Gita, this understanding, I like this image. This is, of course, a lotus with a reflection of the lotus in the water. And generally speaking, just like chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita, we're attentive to the reflection, not to the real thing. We accept the real self to be the body and the mind, the coverings of the soul. And the real soul is forgotten because we're identifying with the coverings. That's called maya. Literally, maya means maya, that which is not. Accept that which is not to be what is, and therefore, by default, that which is not. And that's just happiness in the mode of ignorance. It's not being able to discern what is to be done, what's not to be done. So it accepts what is not to be done is what's to be done. And it's suffering in the beginning and in the end. That happiness in the mode of ignorance is suffering in the beginning and suffering in the end. Like alcohol or smoking cigarettes. I mean, it's, or something that's an unwholesome habit, it's suffering in the beginning and in the end. But people become attached to it and take it as happiness and can't live without it. Happiness in the mode of ignorance. It's unfortunate. It's a conditioning factor, but it's not what real happiness is. So that the real happiness, that the self-realization, because the mode of goodness, the cultivation, the abhyasa, is towards that end of self-realization. It's to see who we really are instead of the reflection. And at that, the distorted reflection, just as the ripples of the water, even the reflection is not clear. It's distorted, disturbed, perverted reflection of who we really are. According to Bhagavad Gita, those in the modes of nature, chapter, actually not chapter 9, it's chapter 14. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish world. So that's the general description of the influence of the modes of nature. Urdvam gacchanti sattvastah Madhye tishtanti rajasa adho gacchanti tamasa. However, those in the modes of nature can be relieved of the modes of nature by association of a saintly person. A classic example of this is Magari, the hunter. The description of this is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you want to go look at the detail. But one time, Narada had been visiting Vaikuntha, because Narada can travel anywhere in the spiritual and the material world. And after spending time with Lord Narayana in Vaikuntha, he took a little journey to Prayag. He wanted to take a sacred bath in the confluence of the holy rivers. So as he was traveling in Prayag, it wasn't built up like it is today, he was passing through a forested area, and the detail is described there. He saw three different animals on the path as he was walking through the forest. A boar, a rabbit, and a deer. Shot, half-killed, and flapping, and crying loudly in pain. And that disturbed Narada's mind to see them in pain. And so he walked out into the clearing where the animals were, and the ones that were in the forested area, they saw Narada and they ran. So the hunter was behind a tree and he came out from behind a tree and he was ready to say some bad things to Narada, who was a cultured fellow. But just being in the presence of Narada, he felt quieted. So he didn't say something harsh and cruel. But he asked him, "You appear to be a saintly person. What are you doing in this dark forest? And do you realize what you just did? Just by walking into the clearing, all the animals that I was going to shoot, they've gone away." And Narada said, "Well, I just wanted to ask you a question. May I ask you a question?" He said, "Sure. Not only a question, I'd like to give some charity to you, saintly person. I have deer skins and tiger skins and so many skins. Tell me which ones you like and I'll give you as many as you like." "No thanks, I don't need any skins. But what I wanted to ask you is, could you, instead of half-killing the animals, kill them completely?" "Why?" "Because they're experiencing great pain. And the laws of nature say, one who gives other living entities great pain, you, my dear friend, the hunter, will have to experience the same pain that they're experiencing, and they may inflict that pain on you directly in their next life." And just, he never heard that before. He's a hunter. And he said, "Well, I learned this from my father. My father taught me everything I know. And my father derived great pleasure seeing the animals screaming in pain and calling out. And it never occurred to me that they would experience pain. And that I would have to experience pain too. What should I do? If I'm going to have to suffer like that," he just quickly, he was in the fast lane, just hearing from Narada. So Narada said, "I can tell you the means that you can become free from all of that horrible reaction. But there's one condition." "What's that?" "Break your bow." "Break my bow? How will I maintain my family? This is my livelihood. It's the only thing I know." And he looked at the bow and looked at Narada, and he trusted Narada. He said, "Don't worry. I'll take care of all of your maintenance." I mean, he's a sannyasi. What's he going to do? Get a job and send him some bakshish or something. But he trusted Narada. So he broke his bow. And then Narada instructed him, all these skins that you have, something very similar to what Haridas Thakur said to the prostitute, all the skins that you have and what you've accumulated, the wealth that you have from trading your skins for other things, give it all away to the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, and with your wife build a cottage by the sacred river, because it's in Prayag, pick one of the three sacred rivers, and build a little cottage, plant a tulsi tree or tulsi plant before the cottage, and chant the holy names of the Lord. And I'll arrange for persons to bring you everything that you need. You'll receive so much, you'll have to give some away in charity. You'll have to worry about your maintenance. So he accepted, just like that. His mode of ignorance and mode of passion just evaporated in the association of Narada. And then, leaving behind those modes, this mode of goodness life, such that when Narada came back with one of his associates, Parvat Muni, they saw the cottage, and then Magari saw Narada, and he came running along the path, but because there was ants on the path, he leaned over and with his upper garment swished the ants out of the way so he wouldn't step on them. And Parvat Muni said, just see, Narada, you're so powerful. This person whose happiness and his whole life is giving pain to animals, half killing them, now will not even step on an ant. The quality of compassion is a natural quality of a Vaishnava, and he became, by becoming a Vaishnava, he became delivered from these lower modes of nature. So here's another connected to this. Nitya Siddhi, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Sadhya Kabunoi, Bengali. Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Karaye Udoy. So Krishna Prema is already within the stage of perfection. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema. There's the goal, the sadhya, and there's the sadhana, and the sadhana and the goal are the same. The sadhana is the calling of the name or associating with serving devotees of the Lord, etc. And Krishna Prema, that goal, it's in the seed stage, it's already there. And it's awakened beginning with Shravana, Shravanadi. Adi means like etc. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. The activities of devotion begin with the process of hearing. Shuddha Chitte, when consciousness becomes shuddha or purified. The lower modes of nature, ignorance and passion, become purified. So supposing somebody is in that unpurified, still lower modes of nature condition, is love of God possible? That was the question. It's there. It's not manifest in its mature stage, and in fact, those who are in this lower mode of nature, they may do things that are hurtful to others. Could you see if there's Canto 3, Chapter 29 in the bookshelf? There's this same topic, the question this gentleman was asking Thursday evening, is discussed in the dialogue between Kardamam, Lord Kapila Dev, and Devahuti, his mother. Bhakti, when a living entity is in the modes of nature. So, for those of you that may not know who is Lord Kapila, there's a painting of Lord Kapila. He is an incarnation of Krishna. He is one of the 12 great authorities or Mahajans listed in Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's particularly known for teaching Sankhya. What is Sankhya? It's right in Bhagavad Gita. The first instructions that Krishna gives is Sankhya. There's the categories of matter, there's the categories of spirit, and we belong to the category of spirit. Sankhya is describing the configurations of matter, and aside from that, there's who we are, the living entity, different than matter. So distinguishing matter and spirit, then the Supreme Spirit, and then ultimately the activities of devotion to the Supreme Spirit. Ultimately, it takes one to pure devotional service. But in short, he's known for teaching Sankhya philosophy. So in his discussions with Devahuti, his mother, she's hearing about devotional service. The background is her husband, Kardama Muni, has gone back to the forest to engage in meditation on Lord Vishnu. So she's now, without the protection of her husband, feeling great separation because they've been together for, it's Satya Yuga, for long, 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 tens of thousands of years. And so she's feeling great separation, and she's turning to her son to ask him how to overcome that feeling of attachment to the temporary body. So the answer that he gives is through devotional service, and devotional service is awakened through association with one who's carrying bhakti. One who's carrying bhakti can give you bhakti. So sadhu sangha. And then he describes many things. And so in this process of devotional service, she asks a very important question. Paraphrasing it to keep it simple. I get it. Bhakti is pure. But what about if somebody like me is not in pure consciousness? What if somebody like me is influenced by the modes of nature? Can we still take up devotional service? But because devotional service is pure and I'm not pure yet, so I have to wait or do something, how does it work? So Kapila Dev explains that devotional service is pure, but one's consciousness may not be pure. Those of you who were attending the class, you may remember. There's a light fixture, and fortunately they replaced all the bulbs, so they all work now. So supposing that bulb right there, we painted it pink. And the one over there, we painted the glass outside blue. And the one over there, red. And the one over there, green. Now what's inside is neither red, blue, orange, or green. The light is a white light. But how it is perceived over here, through passing through that color covering the glass, it looks like red light, blue light, green light, whatever the color is. Similarly, consciousness is pure and bhakti is pure, but if we're covered, it comes out differently. Bhakti is pure, but it comes out differently. So one who is in the modes of nature may be practicing bhakti, but what's inspiring that bhakti and how it plays itself out into the world is according to the modes of nature. Bhakti doesn't become contaminated. Bhakti is pure. We'll see another verse that says that. Bhakti is pure. But consciousness may not be. So, chapter 29. So here's devotional service. This is responding to the question, can there be love of God when you're in the lower modes of nature? So it's similar as, can you engage in bhakti when you're in the lower modes of nature? Because bhakti is pure. And love of God is pure. But love of God can be passed through modes of nature that are not so pure. Devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, who is a separatist, the Sanskrit phrase is bina drik. Drik means to see or vision. One who sees things separate, separatist. So you see things as existing separate from Krishna. If you see things that are separate from Krishna, over there somebody has something I wish I had, so I'm envious of that somebody because I wish I had it. But that something came from Krishna, so it's actually I'm envious of Krishna. Vinadrik. There's nothing separate from Krishna. Envious, proud, violent. Mode of ignorance. Angry, krodha, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. The worship of deities in the temple by a separatist. Again, same translation. The Sanskrit is pratak bhava. Pratak bhava. Bhava having the mood of pratak, seeing something as distinct. So I may be worshipping the deity and I may be thinking pride. I'm a pujari. I'm a priest. I'm a brahmana. And then there's the other people. Don't come near me. I'm a brahmana. Or anyway, and wanting some honor, distinction, profit from worship of the deity. With a motive for material enjoyment, fame, and opulence is devotion in the mode of passion, worshipping the deity specifically. And then mode of goodness, similar to what we read from chapter 18, Bhagavad Gita. When a devotee worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the result of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, his devotion is in the mode of goodness. So in simple language, motivation in the mode of goodness is, I'm doing this because it will purify my existence. Or another way of saying the same, I'm doing this because it ought to be done. That's all. I mean, I don't lie because you don't lie. I don't steal because you don't steal. I'm going into the kitchen in the heat of the summer. You know, in St. Louis is not such a problem. In India it can be a problem. Or take your bath. You know, here we have hot water. But, you know, in the river, in the winter, you don't not take a bath because it's cold. Take a bath, whether it's cold or not cold. You go in the kitchen to cook for the deity because it's for Krishna. You don't not do, you do or not do something because it's pleasing, not pleasing. You do it because it's to be done. And in so doing, it will purify my existence. From thinking about I, me, and mine, instead of thinking of Krishna and Krishna's. At least it's the austerity, or as described here in chapter 18, Bhagavad Gita, abhyasa, the practice of not following the dictates of the senses, but controlling the senses and directing the senses to Krishna's service. Not following the dictates of the mind, which can get pretty noisy sometimes, but you tolerate the indications of the mind, and my dear mind, please think of Krishna. Let us cooperate together instead of you know, jumping up and down and screaming like a little kid. Let us go to Krishna. And you practice and practice and practice. And then comes the transcendental description, which is really nice, very similar to Queen Kunti's prayers, the conclusion of her prayers. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is residing in everyone's heart, just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally towards the ocean. In fact, Kunti uses the very same metaphor. Such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. So that's devotional service, or love of God, in its mature stage. So what if one is not in the mature stage? What if one has the influence of ignorance and passion? Well, Rupa Goswami teaches, he gives a, and this is a painting of Rupa Goswami and his writing, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He gives us this very basic principle of what bhakti is. And bhakti is a cultivation of this principle. Anyabhilashita shunyam, jnana karma janavratam, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam. I put in large letters, bhaktir uttama. That is to say, bhakti is pure, or uttama, uttama, above tama, above ignorance, and above ignorance and passion. It's above ignorance and passion because ignorance and passion are mixed with the mode of goodness. It's above the mode of goodness. Bhakti is pure. And that bhakti can be cultivated even when we're not pure. So I'm still, I'm speaking these things responsive to this gentleman's question. Is it possible to have love of God if one is influenced by the modes of passion or the modes of ignorance or combination? Yes. In a seed state that's not yet mature. In that seed state that's not yet mature, one can do bad things. One can do ignorant things and passionate things. That can do, one will do, because the modes of nature are impelling us to do according to the modes of nature. I was really curious. Probably some others in this room were also curious. This whole thing with jihad, is that really in the Quran? Well, it depends on who you ask. But the ones that I've asked, no. It's writings that came afterwards. There are some things that Muhammad said that indicate, that may indicate, and so persons took, may indicate into it's, this is good for you. You go to heaven if you do the jihad program. Anyway, is that love of God? It, as far as I'm concerned, it's just ignorance. It's not love of anything. In the name of God, so many bad things have been done, isn't it? It's one of the things that people are intimidated about organized religion, because it can organize abuse surrounding the church or the whatever the groups of people are, Muslims or the Turks or the this or the that's, in the name of the Crusades. It was bloody, without detailing. Totally exploitative in the name of, in the name of Christ, or in the name of Allah. So, The modes of nature can be very, very destructive. That's not love of God. But love of God that I may be exhibit, I'll get a little sharing. Maybe some few years ago, attending a Bhakti Vriksha gathering of several Bhakti Vriksha groups in one place. Because they, you know, on a periodic basis, they would have a Kumbh Mela and come together. Several Bhakti Vriksha groups get together. So I came at a time when they were going to have one of those. So in the beginning, this system was being followed. The icebreaker system was the beginning. So the facilitator said, anybody here would like to share something that was like an uplifting and a spiritual experience during your week? One fellow, like, he wanted to be called on first. So he was called on first. And he said, it's like a true confession kind of thing. You know, since I was a small boy, I was always interested in Bhagavad Gita. Wherever there was Bhagavad Gita discussions, I would go. And the fact of the matter is, I never really understood Bhagavad Gita, but I had faith in Bhagavad Gita. And then when I went away to college, I kind of lost track of that, but still I would go to Bhagavad Gita study groups. And then I got my job and I got situated here, and so I found out, there's a Bhagavad Gita study group, great. And for the first time, three things. For the first time, I've been attending this group for about 2 months, month and a half, 2 months. And I'm starting to understand Bhagavad Gita for the first time. And it feels really good. Like, and I have an anger problem. He said, you know, I don't go around hitting people or yelling at my wife. I get angry. And one of the places that make me really angry is in the workplace, when people do what they do at the workplace. You know, there's a deadline for something, and it's not happening, and everyone starts pointing the fingers and backbiting and blaming one another, and they don't do anything about, you know, getting the work done because they're too busy doing all that. It just makes me really angry. But since I started this, I don't get angry anymore. It's not like I went to anger management classes and I tried this and that, nothing was happening. But just from studying Bhagavad Gita. And the people at work said, hey, man, what happened to you? He said, I was reading Bhagavad Gita. You know, come on. When bhakti awakens, and bhakti awakens, shravanadi shuddha chitte, when bhakti awakens through the process of hearing from the right source in the right mood, the other forms and expressions of bhakti also awaken, because that's what's in the heart comes out in all of what you do, all of your senses and your activities in your life. And that Krishna prema starts to grow. That bhakti creeper starts to grow through that process of hearing. And that's what this is saying. In the mature stage, the uttama stage of bhakti, even in the practicing stage, there's less of an interest in fruit of activities. Doesn't mean you become lazy and complacent. It's just pursuing the carrot is no longer the motivation. It's pursuing the pleasure of Krishna, working for the pleasure of Krishna, studying, those of you that are in school, studying as a service to Krishna. Doing whatever you do, eating your breakfast, taking your bath, doing whatever you do, as a service unto Krishna. And it awakens from the hearing, starting with the hearing process, Shravanadi. And it's a cultivation. We're not there. The modes are acting, and there's the other feelings and tendencies are there. If the hearing process is done with care and attention and regularly, then bhakti awakens. And then how do we evaluate, is bhakti properly awakening? Here's another, in the next chapter of Rupa Goswami's writings, Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra Vidhim Vina, Aikuntiki Harer Bhaktir Uttataya Eva Kalpate. Anyone that's been around Prabhupada's writings or recorded lectures knows this one backwards and forwards. He refers to it regularly. And he would personally, himself, refer to the Shrutis and the Smritis and the Puranas and the Pancharatras and the Vidhis of all of those texts. And one who doesn't do that, Utpat, they're simply making a disturbance. Hari Bhakti is the objective, and Hari Bhakti is disturbed if one is advocating something that's not rooted in these authoritative sources. So, love of God that's covered by the modes of nature isn't experienced, is exhibited incorrectly. So the correctly is guided in these ways. And one who takes up that process of bhakti, supposing we're trying to take up the process of bhakti nicely. Supposing we're trying. And then what? Well, we're less than perfect. Maybe there's some perfect persons here, but most of us are less than perfect, myself included. And so when the less than perfect entity, persons, tries to engage in devotional service, there's going to be some mistakes. Krishna says, every endeavor is covered by some type of flaw. So what to speak of a flaw, an unintentional mistake, sometimes something is done that's really bad. Durachar. And sometimes really bad, sudurachar. So Krishna teaches, even if that sudurachar is performed, if that person is ananya bhak, they're engaged in undivided bhakti. Ananya means nothing other than. Anya means other and ananya means nothing other. Nothing other than devotion. Bhajate mam ananya bhak. That person, Krishna considers to be sadhu. That he's sadhu, and the next verse Krishna says he personally intervenes and corrects. He's very kind. And he gives strength to make that corrected course from within to those who are his ananya bhaktas, undivided devotees. So, conclusion. Is it possible, back to the question at the beginning from yesterday, Thursday's class, is it possible for someone who is influenced by the modes of ignorance or passion to have love of God? Yes. Covered, for sure. And in good association, very important, Narada's association with the hunter, etc. In good association, a person that's unwholesome can become fully wholesome and beyond fully wholesome. Go totally beyond the modes of nature. Not just into the mode of goodness, beyond the modes of nature altogether. That's the ananya bhak personality. And it can be cultivated. Good association, proper instruction, abhyasa, practice, just like we read on Thursday. You cultivate. That's bhakti. It's that sort of cultivation, Prabhupada writes. We're not there. We see the objective. We have our founder, Acharya, the principal instructor for all of us. And we have our guides and persons who are helping us on this path of bhakti, who are carefully following and becoming purified themselves. So we keep that association, and then that love of God can mature and become to the proper standard. Just like what Kapila Dev said to Devahuti. Come from the devotional service that's mixed with the mode to devotional service that's unmixed. The cultivation process. Good association is imperative. I wish he was here. Because he'd probably have 10 questions. But he's not here. So let's see if someone else has some points you'd like to bring up or discuss. Okay, you're making it easy for me. Yes?
It takes time,
yeah. It takes more than time. It takes endeavor. Yeah? But be enthusiastic. Even it takes time. Utsahan. While being patient. Okay. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was just remembering today's Bhagavadam class that you talked about this Anyana Sukruti.
Keep going.
So I'm relating that to this topic now we discussed.
Agyata was the word, the adjective. Yeah. Unknowing Sukriti. Agyata Sukriti. Okay?
So you talked about, when a person gets an association with a pure devotee, then he would able to get this ananya bhakti rise above the...
I didn't say that. Well, depends on what reference you're making. There was some discussion this morning about how does one come to the elevated stage of bhakti when one is down in the lower position. And there was some discussion about the unknowingly someone is getting benefit. But you're not speaking about that. You're speaking about the undivided devotion, the acquired association of a pure devotee, and those two separate topics? Yes? Okay. Okay, I'm with you now. Go ahead.
So that's what I'm trying to connect that and this topic, Mara.
I can't follow your question. Can you explain yourself, please?
So today's topic is like how we get person in a lowered modes can practice love of God without contamination. They rise.
Yeah. Okay. Say the whole thing.
I'm kind of connecting that with the morning kind of topic. Like, you know, so because if he has that even to get that association to rise above. That means that he should have that sukriti that we talked in the morning, because that's the understanding that I'm trying to. Is it right, correct, or not?
Do me a favor. Think through your question more carefully, because I don't understand your question.
Sure.
And so you can write it. Send it as a written question, well thought out, because it's not clear.
Okay.
I really like your questions, but I'm not understanding this one.
Sure, my love.
Yes.
Mrugari was able to break his bow due to his faith in Narad Muni. So was it due to the purity of Narad Muni?
Yes.
Or his strong faith?
purity of Narada Muni. He broke through the walls and barriers. This man had no culture.
So like for me as an aspiring devotee, Maharaj, like that, I feel that faith is weak. Purity is not a problem. Purity of devotees and spiritual master is not a problem. So how does this work?
Both are required.
But Mrigari didn't have faith.
Oh, he didn't have culture. But as soon as he was in Narada's association, the narration says, he was ready to, you know, be uncivilized and speak in an uncivilized way. He couldn't do it because he was so moved. So, Narada's purity is not the same as, you know, any one of us. He's bearing the fullness of the Lord's Bhakti Shakti. He's a Shaktivesh avatar. He's one of the Mahajans. He's way up there.
From my side, like cultivation and reading and all this, that I can strengthen my faith. That is what would be.
You work with what you have. Mm. What you don't have, don't lament. Work with what you have and cultivate it. Supposing an agriculturist has some fields that are, some are more fertile, some are less. So that one's less fertile, they may spend several years getting that less fertile soil ready to be fertile or to be productive. And then over there, there's like ample production from that field over there. So if there's some features in you that are strong and some are less than strong and some are really weak, you're a package. You have some, you're a holistic person, and you work with, you've heard me say this. Those areas that give you strength, you do those things. And areas that are less, you cultivate, you take strength from where there's strength and you apply it over there. So we heard, take time. Are you patient or impatient with yourself?
Impatient.
Okay. So you exercise patience. You are where you are in your trajectory, a spiritual trajectory. And be patient with yourself. Be kind to yourself. Krishna's being kind to you. So receive it with the same kind of kindness. Be patient. That doesn't mean diminish your enthusiasm, but it's not, you know, go and stop. It's go and be patient. And the patience is strengthened by you have confidence in Krishna. So that's where you're saying it's weak. So it is what it is. You work with what you have. Be patient and let it grow.
Thank you, sir.
You practice it with yourself and practice it in your home. And then your kids are going, yeah, Mom, practice it in your home. Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. There was one sentence that you said. It was very quote-like. It started with, that's why people are uncomfortable with organized religion, because ... Can you please repeat that?
I don't remember it exactly. They're uncomfortable with organized religion because organizations have a tendency, it's not built into the nature of an organization, but the original zeal or inspiration may get lost in this, the organizational structure. The I want to know my relationship with Krishna mood may get lost, folded into the organizational structure. And without that spirit, that enthusiasm. Bhaktisiddhanta wrote something like this. It's been on one of the forums of Prabhupada disciples discussing this topic. You know, it doesn't have to. After all, Bhaktisiddhanta wanted Gaudiya Math. Your Prabhupada wanted ISKCON. But he didn't want the spirit behind it to dissipate. So we need to continue to invest in spirit behind it. You and me and each one of us and the organization. Because it can get lost. And then one can become moded out and use the instrument of the organization for other purposes. Self-aggrandizement purposes, modes of nature purposes.
Thank you, Maharaj.
You're going to ask something, you're just going to hold the microphone.
Hold on.
Okay. I think we're done. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.